you know, we do realize that you have a business to run, but we also want to hear about the schools and other things you've done. I mean, and that's a whole other story.
Yes.
I know, but
it's like 200 schools now.
Yeah.
146,000 children today enrolled, and that's it. It started years ago in a flood. 1988, there was a terrible flood. And the two rivers which haven't flooded this time were those rivers which created the destruction. It was the Ravi and the Chenab and the Satluj to a certain extent. And this whole, right up to the city of Lahore, they thought the city of Lahore was going to drown. And so they broke the protective embankment outside and the villages got destroyed and Lahore got saved. But anyway, the water came right up to the bridge and it was terrible. And so we went out to help. At that time, it was not very fashionable to go out and help. And I don't remember any foreign appeals, and I don't even remember any other people going out. But 2-3 of us went out. We borrowed somebody's jeep. I remember going through the water, going to the dry spots and helping people. Anyway, food and water, and then we realized medicines. And then we realized that all that gets done. You know, there's food gets done somehow. And that people had lost their homes. Everybody had lost their homes. And we thought we'd help 10 families rebuild their homes. And anyway, we picked a space which was badly hit, got a list. There was 100 people who'd lost their homes in this one little place. Anyway, so we picked 10 and started helping them rebuild. We were giving them money, and we said, you do the labor, and we'll give you the money in installments, because they'd lost everything. And we thought if we gave them the whole money, they'll eat it up. They were hungry. And food is not what you want to sink your money into. So anyway, so we went back next week with the next installment, and there were hundreds of people, and everyone was like pulling at us and saying, there's 2-3 of us, that was all. And saying, we've also lost our homes, would you, you know, please build our home also. So we took on another house and ended up building about 75-80 homes. And the rest of the group dropped off after 2-3 months, and I couldn't let go. It was I'd never seen such tragedy or so much poverty at such close quarters. And anyway, I just got involved with the people. So I was there every day helping them rebuild and with the money, of course. And then soon I found I was like this Pied Piper. It's 15 kilometers out of Lahore. And it was such a shock for me. No running water, no sewage, no electricity, and no schools. You know, our lives here, and especially at that time, were very protected. And there's no sort of, you live in this little closed silo and no meeting with anybody. You know, we thought life was great. And up till then, I always believed that Lahore, the cultural heart of Pakistan, and everything's great. Anyway, so I became like a Pied Piper, and these little children were following me around every day with runny noses and matted hair and barefoot and so dirty you can't imagine. And so one day I told the women, I said, why do the children follow me around? She says, what else should they do? I said, why don't they go to school? There's no school. Also in that process, I realized that the flood will come again next year. And I thought, will they wait for someone like me to come to help them rebuild? And what's the difference between them and me? And I realized clearly in a minute, I'm educated, I can plead a cause, and they can't. And honestly, working with those people really made me understand that education is the only empowerment. Without education, you know, you might as well not be, because you're really truly unempowered. So I said, what if I build a school? And all the women said, oh, now stop the homes, build a school. That's the funnest thing, you know, I found in these floods and everywhere. People in this country are dying for an education. So I came back to the city and started asking my friends. I spoke to everyone I knew and I said, I want to build this school and I need help. And everybody, 22 years ago, everyone said, you've totally gone mad now. I'm thinking they must have thought I'd anyway gone mad. I was, you know, going to the village and helping people rebuild. But anyway, so they said, now you've gone totally mad. Don't you know the poor don't want to study? You know, I've heard this. People just say this all the time. Don't you know the poor don't want to study? There's so many empty buildings. And I said, no. I've worked with the poor for so long, and I know they want an education. I have never met anybody, any person who doesn't love their children as we all do, who don't have the same dreams for their children as we do. It's just that they don't have the opportunity. So anyway, everybody refused. I put together the money. I don't know. God helps. And I somebody donated that piece of land right then. That's a long story. And I built the school. And the day the children were standing outside. And the concept always was equality of opportunity. That's been my whole thing. I really sort of think that we have this two-language system in this country, English medium and Urdu medium. It used to bother me a lot. It's like a class difference. I think it's like an apartheid. So anyway, so I was determined to make it like an equal education, English medium and proper, exactly what I had. And so we started. It was 100%, 95% illiteracy around. And we had to start with little towels and soaps and combs and leading children to the hand pump. But anyway, so and within 6 months, those children were fabulous. You know, even when before building the school, I just kept thinking, oh God, if there was only a place I could have a room so that they have a reason to go somewhere every day to wash their faces, to comb their hair and do something for 2 hours. But anyway, so it was better. We managed the school. And by the end of the year, word had gotten around, there's a school where education happens. And next year we had 450 children. Next year we had 850. And they were doing so well. Yes, where did the teachers come from? We just got anybody from the area and then we just trained. And trained away. And inside of 5 years, we had our first school graduation exam because, you know, children came in all sizes. Since there was no education, 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, and we managed to sort everything out. The older ones learned much faster. We kept doing double promotions and whatever. Once the first metric happened, you know what metric is, like the school leaving exam in 95. So all the villagers came to me and said, you know, now you've educated our girls and you should build a college. And I said, no, I've done what I had to do. Now you can send them to college elsewhere. And by then, maybe we had 1,500 children in the school. Anyway, so then after a month later, they came back and they said, where will our girls go to college? You should start a college. And I understood that. I said, okay, you're right and I'm wrong. And so we quickly started a college right there. And so we had like 12 years of school in there. By then I knew it was a hugely successful experiment. And I was just dying to do more because, you know, in this country, you can't educate a few hundred children and think you've achieved anything. And so we built, luckily somebody donated land, I collected money. We built another school and then another school. And they all...
Have you done this all on your own?
The money kept... I'm the biggest beggar in the world. Right. And I was telling everybody that... no. Are you getting some money out of me? Yes. And everybody said, how do you get money? Everyone asks me even now. And I'm saying, you have to look out because the moment after 10 minutes, I'll ask for money from anybody and everybody. There was a time in the beginning I thought I lost all my friends because I was so manic and I understand now, just so focused on what I was doing that at any dinner party anywhere, after the first 10 minutes, I would ask people for money. So I lost all my friends, but maybe I didn't.
No, I think Dr. Mirza brings up an important point.
Yeah.
It's not just about, did you do this on your own? I mean, we're talking about training and giving people capacity. Who helped train you and where did you go to bounce off ideas? And I think entrepreneurship is such a lonely, it isn't a lonely endeavor. And I firmly believe that it has thrived in the West, particularly in the United States, because there are communities that entrepreneurs can go to because you feel like you're crazy. But then when you talk to people, it's, oh, okay, I'm not that insane. Can you talk a little bit about the community here or the lack of it?
There's nobody. We'll get there. We're not there yet. I'm sure the first entrepreneurs in the US and the West and all must have been pretty lonely and pretty much on their own. Now, also having done my whatever business courses, I've realized that it's all about, you know, it's all about, you only read about other people's lives. the case study method. It's brilliant. But everyone has done whatever they had to do, and we only then study it afterwards and get best practices or mistakes out of it. So here there is I've never been to business school, and not a trained educationist, and lots of people would come and ask me where sits the design team, you know, when I was doing all the designs, and I'd say, oh my God, it sits here. And then people would say, what design school have you been to? I've never been to design school, I've never been to business school. But there's not support in the community. There is not people that you can go and ask. I think there are essentially, you'll find a lot of people who've just gone on, followed their own gut and their own instinct. I think I was just following my own instinct. And it was just the condition of the people. I can't tell you why it moves me so much. I have no. Lots of people ask me this, who's your role model? Why are you doing it? I'm saying I can't explain. I can say things like, Bertrand Russell's, which had always moved me. You know, three emotions, simple but overwhelmingly strong, have governed my life. A longing for love, a search for knowledge, and an unbearable pity for the suffering of mankind. And so all such things. Or one thing which has beaten my brain now for years is, hold high the torch, 'tis yours to keep it burning bright, yours to pass on when you no longer need light. It was given you by other hands, you know. Maybe it started down its pathway bright the day the Maker said, let there be light. But to me, it just says, it's yours to pass on when you no more need light. To me, that's very important. Hold high the torch. It is yours to keep it burning bright, yours to pass on when you no more need light. I don't know, it used to beat in my brain for the longest time when I was leaving my school. So they had this school leaving little message, and that's the message that my school had given me. And it just stayed with me. And when I was there out there with the children, with all illiteracy around me, I realized how cruel it was, how unfair. That children should be deprived of a right to education, because I understand that you cannot ever get the rights that you cannot read. Who's going to give you the rights that you can't read? What are you going to do in the world today if you're not educated? I keep asking everyone, what job will you give the illiterate? What are these people going to do? So that's what moves me to the education. The 146,000 children is huge today, but in the context of country, it's not large enough. My only desire at this time is I know how to do it now. The only thing which stops me is the money, because government has never given us any money, and I just raise the money constantly. Of course, the business is really a help, because obviously a certain percentage goes in there. But it's grown huge now. But the thing is that it needs to grow huger. I feel we are absolutely on the brink of movement. I mean, we could really change things. We could change how things are happening in this country. It's all about education.
What do you need to change it?
I need more money to be able to, I need to be able to generate money to be able to educate more people. Look, you know what? We are still reporting declining literacy rates in Pakistan. It's not that schools are collapsing. It's that population is growing faster than anybody's ability to provide education. The only cure for the population bomb, what do you think it is? It's education. There's nothing else.
I'm actually going to buy your paper. I'm going to buy it from you because I don't even trust you to give me the
We just have to educate on a war footing, do nothing else. I promise you we'll solve the problems.
But what would be an amount of new resource that you could manage? I mean, in other words, what would be an amount that if somebody said we're going to, that would allow you to scale?
The amounts I can write down, what I would like to do is take on another 100 schools like now.
Right.
We can do that. I mean, I want to move in small terms. We have the capacity to do another 100 schools. And then in a year, I know that we can grow capacity to then, we'll start planning for it and we can do many more. When I started, the first school took long, 4 years before I built the second school. The second school was easy. I just picked up the best people from my first school and sent two of them there. The third school was really easy. In the first year, I only visited that school twice, and it was a donor. And that donor kept saying, there's only one request. I want you to come to my school at least once a month, you know. And he didn't live there, he just donated. And I said, how does it bother you? Does the school work fine? He said, yes, but we need you to come. I said, you don't need me to come, but anyway. And then when the government invited us, we've adopted government schools, that's how we've grown so much. In 98, government invited me and said, you know, your schools are doing so well. And I'm thinking, I had three schools at that time. What was the big deal? Anyway, three schools with about 3,000 or 4,000 children, doing brilliantly well. But anyway, so government invited us and said, you know, we'd like you to adopt some of our schools in the city of Lahore. And I went around and surveyed in 1998 about 25 schools. And I was horrified. The government schools were a mess. No drinking water, no toilets, no lights, no fans, no floor, no ceiling. Heaps of garbage, no teachers, no furniture. You know, nearly all the children were on the floor. And there were children sitting there. Sometimes on floors which looked like they'd been bombed, you had little children sitting on little bags that they brought from their home with their neat little uniforms in their little bags, waiting for an education to happen, which was never going to happen. And so I agreed to take on 10 government schools. It took us 8 months to thrash out a contract which was acceptable to me, because government kept saying, you give the lights, the fans, the furniture, the teachers, the everything, you don't enter our schools. They actually said that. You don't come in. You can take a report from the headmasters. And I said, I look stupid. I'm not even giving you one fan. I want the right to monitor education. I'm here to educate the children. I don't want to put in lights and fans. You can do it if you wish. So anyway, we thrashed out a contract, and which gave me the right to run the schools. And then we entered. And the day we had to enter, 1st of September 1998, everything was done. Our furniture was in, our teachers were trained, and we had to walk in. And they called me into town hall. Town hall is, you know, it's this huge building. And he took me into a room where there was 25 men sitting around this huge table, and I can never forget it. And he says, it was the administrator of law. He says, these are the unions. Now you have to deal with the unions. And I keep thinking, he just threw me to the unions. 25 guys, oh my God.
Unions of what, teachers?
Teachers, 11 teachers unions in the city of Lahore. And they went like that. They said, you foreign agent, where have you come from? What? Exactly like that. I can't even repeat it all. But anyway, exactly like that. What can you do? And I had this young team. I've always had a very young team. In the beginning, I said, everyone around me is under the age of 25. But anyway, and so they said, what are you going to do that weekend? I have been teaching for 25 years. What are you going to teach me? And, you know, and all like strict and rigid sort of guys. And luckily, I'd been doing it for so many years, and luckily, people don't scare me at all. And so we started this whole thing of, I kept talking to them, what are your results, what do your children do, and I could pick real blowholes into all their, whatever they were saying. One of the guys who was fighting with me the most said, my school has, 300 children, and our metric result is 23%. How can you do better than that? And I said, oh my God, I'm talking of 100%, you know. And every child is 100% for their parents. One child fails, it's 100% for a family. And, you know, I just kept talking and arguing and like that, and then started working. We'd made a strategy of changing by being role models, not by criticism. So we'd made a strategy of no criticism, no confrontation, but working really fast. And it worked. So for a whole year and a half, the unions were like that. They were out on the streets and they were saying, you un-Islamic, you whatever, and nothing. And I'd sit with them and say, okay, now, tell me the real problems. What am I doing wrong? You tell me what, and there was nothing, obviously. So anyway, a year passed. We turned around those schools. Government, then Musharraf came in, military. They called me into town hall again and they said, you're doing a great job. Would you like to take over all the schools of Lahore? And I still remember saying to them, would you like to give me some money? And they said, we don't have money, but your work is brilliant, and we'll give you can have all the schools, we trust you. And I said, money doesn't grow on trees, how am I going to do this? So anyway, I said, I'll take on 10 more schools. And they said, we think that this is such a good idea, we're going to give all our schools to NGOs. And they called me next day again and they said, even if you're going to take 100 schools next year, tell us now, we'll save them for you. All the others we're going to give to, every, you know, we're going to advertise and give to NGOs. And I was terrorized. I said, don't do this. You know, other people, everybody's not good. You can't hand your schools over to people who don't know. How can you do it? I don't even allow people to give one lecture in any one of my schools unless I've read that lecture or I've, it's you know, I don't want people to come and talk to my children about whatever they want. Anyway, luckily that failed. I mean, they tried to give schools over to NGOs. Some people took them, left them. Anyway, so we've gone on. Then every successive government which came in, then the Nazims came in, and Nazims said the same thing. They said, oh, your work's brilliant. Why are you only doing 35 schools? Can we give you 140 schools together? Anyway, stupid. I kept taking them. And so today we have 146,000 children.
So in terms of the extra 100 and then the capacity building to do more, like just in terms of rough, you know, rupee amount. I mean,
yes.
Just rough.
You know what? It costs us roughly 300 rupees a child. That's what it roughly costs us. 300 rupees per child, give or take.
Per month.
If the children, if the school is small, it'll cost us a little more because the overheads are fixed. The head teacher, the peons, the, but as the school grows bigger, you know, then the
But in order to get the new schools equipped, I mean, the fixed cost
yes,
is 100,
yes.
But also you talked about the capacity building to really go
yes.
beyond that. So I mean, just like a rough dollar amount or rupee amount.
I can ask someone to do, if it's 300, look, if we take on, we have 150,000 children now, if we take on what? The 100 schools could have, wait a minute, so 300 into 100, is it 3,000?
3,000.
It's 3,000. No, no.
Are you adding or multiplying? Multiplying
or what are you multiplying? I can't talk.
Into. No, it can't be 60. It's 30,000.
That's right.
So 30,000 into so it's 30,000 children into 300 per child is equal to 900,000. That's 9 million. 9 million would be run 90. That would be running expenses. 9 million would be running expenses per month.
Little,
I'm sorry. Yes, per month. To educate the 30,000 children?
Right.
Would cost us. Would
so
cost.
It's a million, it's let's just say roughly $1 million a year.
Yes.
Roughly.
You do the calculation.
Right, so yes. $1 million a year for the, that's per year.
Yes.
And then just to kind of get it all going.
You know, we'll have to see what has happened. I've been to the flood area, I've been there from day one, we were in there. You know, the amazing thing that's happened is that the buildings have not collapsed. We had 5 schools out there, about 1,000 children. And the buildings got inundated, they got totally flooded out, they were underwater for like 3 weeks. When the water went away, the buildings didn't collapse. So I think that to fix some of the schools will not cost a lot. I'm actually making a project, writing it down, put in 2 rooms in every school and 100,000 rupees to bring the schools back to working, because some of them have got a lot of silt in there. And to fix the furniture is maybe 100 or 150,000 per school, and then we can just start. And all the children have lost all their books. We can write all this down. So I thought 1,000 rupees per child, books, bags, uniform, shoes, and we're in business.